I'm Cameron Esposito, the host of Wham Bam Pow. This is a movie show, a podcast focused on action and sci-fi films. With me, as always, the Afro spokesman, Mr. Ricky Carmona.
What it do, people?
And also the lady James Dean, Ms. Rhea Butcher.
Hello there.
And we're starting today just like a little preoccupied by something, I think all three of us, and that is the passing of a member of the Chicago comedy community. Now, Ricky, this was sort of during the end of your tenure there. You were in Chicago for many years. How long did you do comedy in Chicago? Stand-up comedy?
I would say from late 2001 onward.
And then you moved here when?
I moved here in 2011.
Yeah, so 10 years in the city.
Yep.
And then, Rhea, when did you start doing comedy in Chicago?
Well, I started doing improv in 2010, and then I started doing stand-up in August of 2011.
Yeah, and I think I moved to Chicago in, I want to say 2006. I moved back home to Chicago, and then I moved here to Los Angeles a year and a half ago. So it's a formative place in all of our lives, and it's where we all met. And there's a special thing about the scene in Chicago, which is that there is no industry, really. And so a lot of what you're doing when you're working on your craft is going out and doing live shows. In fact, it's all you're doing. You're doing it every night, 7 days a week, and you're probably catching multiple sets. And I would say at any given time, there's about 100 people doing stand-up and about 50 people taking that like really, really, really seriously and going out every night. And you go to the same places with the same people, and it's your nightly ritual. And those people are your coworkers in a way that you're coworkers, because a lot of people still have day jobs. I still had a day job when I was there. My coworker was a baby because I was a nanny, but they're coworkers in a special way.
That was your client, technically.
That was my client.
Baby was your client.
Yeah. They're your coworkers in a special way, and it's a great place to come up. It's a great place to do live comedy, and I think one of the best places for live stand-up. So a beloved member of that community, Mr. Dan Ronan, passed away on Friday. And Dan was 26, but I'd known him since he was 20. He started doing stand-up before he could even get into bars, and he would perform at whatever shows were not at bars, which is like three shows. But one of those was a show called The Lincoln Lodge, which used to run out of the back of a pancake house, and I worked at that show as well with him. And he was a headstrong, so dedicated, just lover of the craft of stand-up. To meet a 20-year-old guy who's like, no, like, this is how we book people, and this is how you get road gigs. And he, you know, we fought a lot, and I really loved him. He was a really nice man, and I'm really sad on his passing. I know, Rhea, you guys were also very close.
We were, yeah. I mean, it was a brief period of time, but that's the thing about Dan, that he was like friends with everybody in this way that was very genuine and real and true. I mean, I posted this on my Facebook. I said, like, we were really good friends. We had like pet names for each other. He like taught me a lot about stand-up. There are no photographs of us together. There's no sketches. I think there's like one video that we just happened to be standing on stage, you know, like that. I think that's the only instance of us in the same space together. But so like the only remnants of our friendship is really like in my heart. But he had a tremendous impact on my view of stand-up and the craft of it, like you were saying, and professionalism, and also the joy of it, because he's like one of the only stand-ups. Well, he was one of the first upperclassmen to really like reach out to me and mentor me in that way, even though he was 5 years younger than me. And I just remember seeing him like at Zany's in Chicago and laughing. And not that many comics, went, especially in Chicago. It's probably similar in other scenes where like...
You remember seeing him laughing.
Him laughing at
laughing.
The show. Yeah, he was laughing at the show, at the comics on the show, genuinely laughing. And not that many people do or do that.
Well, a lot of comics are watching the act and analyzing
exactly
what's going on and trying to figure out like...
And you don't want to give yourself away. Like your laugh as a comic is like... you know, it's monetary. Like, it's if you laugh for somebody else, then that means like you're saying like, okay, you're in, you know. And he wasn't scared to do that if you earned it, you know. And I don't know, he taught me how to sit in a room.
which actually does mean a lot.
Yeah, it does.
Ricky, did you know Dan?
Yeah, I knew him towards the end of my time when I was there, and I thought he was great. I loved him, and he was a genuine, good dude. He, he was a guy who, like, when we would go on stage, I think comics always had a thing of like, let's go back and watch this guy. If like when he was in the room, you know, I'd like, oh, I'm gonna stick around and watch Dan sit, and then I'll take off.
Kind of unpredictable.
You know? Yeah. He was just this really funny guy. That's really terrible, you know? Just kind of bums me out.
Yeah, 26. He passed away at 26. And it is a big void in that entire community. I was thinking about it today. You know, he produced and worked on at least three of the most popular shows in that city. And it's a city where there's many, many shows, many, you know, every night of the week. But those shows, those are the ones that everybody cared about getting on. And Dan was on all of them. He was a part of all of them because he, like, wormed his way in there because he was just there. And he just, you know, like Ray was saying, just knew how to be in the room, knew how to support. And so we're very sad on his passing. And I guess just before we move on to the show, and early, we'll leave you with this. We want to, all of us, vouch for Dan Ronan as a comic. His last name is spelled R-O-N-A-N, and you can look him up on YouTube, or you can read some of his tweets, or just go to his website and just see anything about who the guy was, because I do believe he was already a comic. I was going to say, I do believe he, you know, would have done this for the rest of his life. He would have been a pro, but honestly, at 26, he's already a touring pro. He was already doing this, so it would have gone on from there, and he already did it. You should go check that out. And we will be back with more of the show after this. And welcome back. Well, that was very real, and I think that's actually good, you know? Sometimes you have to be a human person. And I know some people out there that are listening have probably lost someone, so maybe you can remember this feeling. I cried yesterday for the first time in like 2.5 years. It was an unreal experience. Rio was very happy, actually. But just to see tears.
To see you crying.
To see that I have any emotional capacity for anything.
It works.
my tear ducts.
I like the idea of every
not
time.
Sewn shut.
Cameron cries, just a woohoo in the room of Rio.
She's alive.
But we on the show today, we got news reviews, things you can use. We got a review of Edge of Tomorrow, which is in theaters now. Early spoiler alert, fucking go see that movie. Just, it's important to me. And let's start with some movie news. So there was a bit of a ruckus when this new Star Wars cast was announced because it had just one female. Of course, Lupita Nyong'o has also been added, so we know there's going to be two. But still, the ladies of the Star Wars verse have always been underutilized and underappreciated and also, like, underrepped.
I would also say underdressed.
Yes, they have, Rhea.
If you're not counting Amidala, but whoever counts.
I mean, she had, like, a lot on, but, like, not in my mind. Because sure, right? I like Natalie Portman. But Disney was releasing, you know, because Disney now has the rights to all the Star Wars stuff and is doing, like, kind of some interesting and adorable and weird things. Like, for instance, a Muppets Star Wars line of toys, which just makes you think that everything in the world can intersect. Oh, look, it's like Kermit Solo or whatever, whichever one he is.
I think he always plays Luke.
Yeah, that makes sense. Why would I say
Kermit
Jesus?
Equals Luke?
Yeah, of
Miss
course
Piggy
he does.
Equals
right.
Leia, of course.
Who's Han Solo?
Fozzie is clearly Han Solo, yeah? Gonzo? Actually, you know
what? No, he's Darth Vader.
Oh.
Don't you think?
Yeah, he is Darth Vader.
Yeah.
Because the thing has the thing. And then,
the thing does
and then
have
Rolf,
the thing.
Rolf is Chewbacca, I believe.
Well, this and is Skeeter a great part of the show right now.
Let's Skeeter break it down, shall we?
Our CP3... wait,
what was that?
C-3PO, excuse me, and R2-D2, I believe.
I would say, can I vote for Fozzie? I really want to get Fozzie in there.
I know that people listen to this show to hear us summarize toys.
Absolutely.
They could Google image.
Absolutely.
It's fun.
Can't wait to do it next week with My Little Pony.
There's the one with the rainbow, and she is purple
as
with
Jim
the
and the
pink hair. So Princess Leia toys were not going to be released in Disney stores. Bam. Twitter campaign. And now they're going to be released. That happened. They
really?
Were not going to be released.
I saw that.
And now they're going to be released.
I think that is shocking, actually.
Absolutely.
I think that is absolutely, like, anybody that thinks that, you know, I think we had the Lego conversation around the Lego movie about, like, highly gendered toys. And if anybody thinks that that is crap, the fact that they were not going to produce a toy of a character in a film that probably billions of people have
seen. I mean, she's one of the more iconic.
I mean, for crying
honey
out bun loud.
Hairdos of all time.
Princess Leia, she's Luke Skywalker's sister. Spoiler alert. How could you not put that? That's
Ricky,
insane to me.
Your well, statement doesn't pass the Bechdel test.
If you have been to a Disney store, you know that it's princesses and then not princesses. And so it's really from that, I think. I think it's honestly where they were locating the toys. I don't think it's right. I think it's a major oversight. I think I'm even thinking about how much money they make on, like, costumes. You know, that's a big industry for them.
It reminds me of the Adventure Time Happy Meal toys, where they just didn't make the princess from... I'm not super familiar with the characters, but did you know about that? Didn't make her.
Oh, is that true?
Or
I guess
she was just
there was
in the girls one, and you couldn't get any of the other characters?
Okay, I thought the controversy was that they made Adventure Time stuff for boys, and then there was a girl option. It was like, a flower petal.
Right. But I think within that case, if that was what it was, they didn't make the princess character for the boys.
That's crazy, because Lumpy Space Princess, one of the most famous princesses from Adventure Time, is actually voiced by Pendleton Ward, who created the show and is a dude. So... go ahead and put that in your purple, lumpy pipe. Okay, yes. This is a problem. Maleficent is not doing very well. I mean, I think Disney does have a hard time figuring out, like, how they're pitching stuff to girls. I mean, there is a beauty salon at Disneyland and Disney World now, where you can princessify yourself, because that nanny kid I talked about earlier went to Disney World and she princessified herself. And it's like a thing
that
you do.
Is that the actual term, princessify?
No, okay. I can't remember what it's called, but it's curious. Like the name of everything is very branded. Like the name of the salon is like the 10 minutes to midnight salon. And look like little, she was like 2.5 at the time, 3. And they put like pageant outfits on them. Little top knots and makeup and stuff. And you know what? I her parents are lovely, lovely people, and I completely supported them doing it, because you can't keep your kid away from what every other kid gets to do. I mean, you can't. It's like, I don't know that that's any more healthy.
Absolutely.
But maybe there's some hope, because it was also a new hope even, because it was recently announced that they're going to try to do a live-action Beauty and the Beast. Now, I don't know if you remember on this very show when I, Cameron Esposito, predicted that Disney movies to live-action would be the new superhero films, that they're going to probably do all of them. But I was totally right.
Oh, man. And I can't wait to see The Little Mermaid.
Yeah. Oh, like a dark Little Mermaid?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, she's like, it's like a kind of a blackfish sort of a thing.
Right, yeah. She's like really
sad.
Scaly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So...
kills somebody with a fork.
Live action Beauty and the Beast. I mean, you know, as we all know, the other live action Beauty and the Beast, the television show, a fucking slam dunk.
Yeah, if it ain't broke, don't fix. Can we just show like 2 hours of Beauty and the Beast episodes? Like, tell all these kids, yeah, this is a live action version. I don't know why it looks like 1987. It's a period piece.
It is a period piece from 1987. Idea of what France looks like. I want to do more shows that are that are just like, remember in the 60s
so many
when
filters.
We thought this is what the Bible was? I love it. Are you guys interested in seeing these movies from our childhood?
Live action Disney
stuff?
Movies? I don't know. I was, and here's where everybody calm down. I've never seen Beauty and the Beast. Relax! Relax!
But
I haven't
Ricky,
seen
even
a
from
lot
like
of...
a, even from a, all right, I'm going to sell it to you.
I'm going to say one word to you
yeah.
that is going to void every check that you write.
Musicals.
Exactly. I am out.
Well, by the way, that was a great Chewy that I just did.
That was terrible.
Real high register on that Chewy.
Yeah, he's upset.
Yeah. He stubbed his toe.
It's a tenor. That's like a tenor.
Is that just... No, I'm just gargling.
No, he's gargling.
I have a Ludens scope. For you. Yeah. You need a Ludens, Chewy?
What is amazing about Beauty and the Beast from a technical perspective is that they used a crane shot in that there's a ballroom scene. You've probably seen
I've
it.
I've seen that scene.
And it's a crane shot that is in an animated film. And it's like a huge brand new use of computer generated imagery.
And
it looks beautiful and still holds up.
Might I add that the marble in that scene looks amazing.
Rhea's, she says that to me every morning when we wake up.
Now they're all dancing and singing during all of this?
Yes.
Yeah, they go like, B. Guest B, our guest, put our service to the test. Oof. Add your napkin around your neck, shall we, and we'll provide the rest. Soup du jour, hot adult. Oh, wait, did I lose it?
I think you lost it, but it's okay.
Try the great stuff, it's delicious. Don't believe me, ask the dishes. They can sing, they can dance. After all, Miss, this is
that's
Ram,
a really
so
great Jerry Orbach.
Never second best. Go on and fold your men. You'll take a glance and then you'll be our guest. Be our guest. Be our guest. Oh, Lumiere. And then that's the feather duster.
Wow.
So I am familiar with it.
If it's not Baroque, don't fix it. That is my favorite line from that film.
Rhea really looks like Cogsworth.
I am Cogsworth. Good God. I am the Cogsworth of every film. Like,
you're the Cogsworth of every life. Conversation.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Well, actually, have you
if it's not
considered...
Baroque, do not fix it.
And my arms are made of fire. So that's the thing. Okay. Well, that was great. And I can't wait to hear people's response to that.
Woo!
I know a lot of the other ones as well, not just from that movie. Quiz me. So Ant-Man, as we reported last week, no longer an Edgar Wright film. We're just going to go right into this
Ant-Man transition. Can we just make an Ant-Man segment for here?
The only reason I think this is interesting is that it got taken away from Edgar Wright. I don't even care about this franchise. I never read Ant-Man. I don't give a
thing.
Fuck.
That's what's driving me crazy about it.
Should have an Ant-Man segment, because who cares?
When did we all get so nuts about Ant-Man that they have to keep reporting who's directing it?
I think people... Today, just because of it's the Edgar Wright like fandom, yes? That's what people care about, right?
I think because it's silly.
I think the fandom that's there isn't that big. I think it's vocal, but I think it's not that big, or else his movies, which have all been good, would make more money.
Yeah.
But so it's like, if he's not involved, why are we
just
still talking
great
about
clickbait articles? Is that what what it is?
I feel like
somebody loses their job, and so it's just like something to talk
sometimes
about.
Sometimes this is the downside of the 24-hour news cycle, where it's like, we gotta tell you every single step of what. No, you don't, man. You could just go make the fucking movie and then show me a trailer, and then I'll go see it.
By the way, something to talk about. Great movie. So you can just make that again. So Ant-Man. Do you even want to know?
I know who's directing it because they keep telling me now.
I can't not know.
I can't not know it.
Ant-Man is the opiate of the masses.
Do you know what else he did? Peyton Reed.
What?
Bring It On.
Oh, God.
That's like his other big movie. By the way, go fuck yourself if you don't love that movie. Rhea, I've never seen it. It's very good.
I don't like the way that the title of that film is tilted on the cover art. It bothers me. I know that's a silly thing.
No,
if it's not Baroque, don't fix it.
Exactly. I love what you bring to the conversation.
Right. That's how you handle
that. I won't see. Ricky's like, I don't see musicals. Ricky's like, I don't see anything where the typeface is not
at a diagonal
correctly. So,
the kerning on that is way off.
Straighten that shit.
I'm not even going to talk about who's going to write it. I don't care. We're moving on. All right. This is it. Final thing. Do you know? Well, you've been reading stuff then. Do you know who's rumored to play the new Indy? Do you guys know this? Now, as you know, I don't even give a shit about the Indiana Jones franchise.
How did I miss this?
Yeah. Controversial.
Yeah.
Controversial statement out of Cameron Esposito.
New
you guys
Indiana
love it.
Jones? What
new
are you Indian, talking about?
Yeah, rumor, what's going on here?
Rumor that there's going to be a new Indy. Rumor that
a
this
reboot?
Is...
Are we talking about a reboot situation or what?
What's going on?
Or like a torch passing?
I think it's a torch.
Okay, so we're just Mutt Williams is just out of it?
Yeah, I think
nobody cares anymore? Okay.
Well, maybe it's him. What?
Just tell me what the rumor is.
What are you talking about?
I don't know. Forget it.
Crystal Skull?
Yes.
Is that the name of Shia LaBeouf?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think maybe they're just buffing him out of the way and buff somebody else in there.
Yeah.
LaBeouf? I mean, it could be the same person.
To
it could be the same
curb.
Character, okay. But I just think it's not going to be Shia because remember how he...
He's retired.
He's wearing a bag on his head, and so that was a whole thing.
Right. That's replacing the fedora.
Yeah, exactly. I want to see bag on his head Indiana Jones. He's like constantly putting a bag of a similar weight to his head on his head. Come on, that was a decent Indiana Jones for
who
some.
Who was the comic back in the '80s who would wear the? Wasn't he like the mystery comic?
The unknown comic.
That guy is Indiana Jones.
Bring that guy back. Robert Pattinson. There you go.
Oh, Robert Pattinson. I hope this is one of those fake rumors that they just pop in there to like.
I thought that too, but then I thought about it and I was like, I can see it. I can see them trying to sell us that. Because he's like got all of the stuff. Like, if you just look at the. Just like, ooh, general, like, his whole thing is that he's got charisma. Whether or not you believe that he does, that's his whole thing. Ugh. Ooh, his whole thing is that he's, like, kind of small and, like, handsome, dark hair.
He would be crushed under a tank the first time he left his house.
Wait.
He's Indiana Jones. He's just going to be around tanks. That's what happens.
Drive tanks
just
where Indiana Jones
in front of a tank.
Yeah. I mean, he could get crushed under a tang, let's be honest. Just a
can of tang?
Just a can of tang.
Just one scoop of tang.
But... That's not the, I mean, yeah, you're right. But, I mean, that's all because Harrison Ford has the attitude for it. It's not like he's got some great build in them movies. I mean, yeah, he looks great in a jacket, but I'm just saying, like, he could be crushed under a tank. It's just that he would tell the tank to fucking stop it.
I would rather see, not to get spoiler here, I would rather see Emily Blunt as Indiana Jones than
there
I would.
There you go.
That'd be great
there
Indiana
you go.
Jones.
Robert.
That'd be great pretty, Indiana Jones boy. Because... Not to give a spoiler here, but yeah, let's give as many spoilers. Emily Blunt is amazing in Edge of Tomorrow.
Yeah.
I think Rhea and I have discussed, I'm sure you'll agree, Ricky, somebody give that woman her own action franchise.
Yeah, she can handle that easily.
Oh, yeah. She was walking all over that movie. Yeah. That movie was hers. She owned it. She put a tag around its neck and got it neutered because it belonged to her. We will be back with a new pitch hit right after this.
Oh, my God.
Hi, my name is Hrishikesh Hirway, and I have a podcast called Song Exploder. In each episode, a musician takes apart one of their songs and piece by piece tells you the story of how it was made. You get an inside look into the creative and technical process and a unique view of a song by hearing just the drums or just the guitars or, say, just a Wurlitzer piano. If you're a fan of music, if you make music, or if you just like to learn how things are made, come check it out on MaximumFun.org. Thanks.
So some of you are just rejoining us having fast-forwarded through the song and therefore missed the rest of the news section.
But thanks to everybody that listened to all of it.
But it meant a lot to us. And for those of you that didn't listen, man, did everybody else win the lottery, because that's the whole thing I give out, lotto numbers. Is that even still a thing?
The lottery?
Yeah.
Yeah!
Well, this is a brand new pitch hit today, and I've decided to... You know, I think I've been stern in the past with you guys. You know, you're great executives. You're developing a lot of stuff. And I want you to know that though I am a successful person and though I own a movie studio and a television studio and Susu Studio, I still care about you. You know, in the past, I have not given you presents for Christmas or any other holiday. In the winter or summer. I didn't give you any days off at all last year. And you're very thin.
I haven't seen my family in 3 months.
Yeah. Right. Well, what were their names? I don't care.
I don't remember.
So I've decided to turn over a new leaf. And I asked you both to bring in a film. And I want you to know I'm going to try and just, if I can, respond in a kind way. You know, really acknowledging the people that you are with real selves and beingness. So the assignment was Tom Cruise. Now, when we all saw Oblivion last year, we thought, well, his career just went into Oblivion. You know?
Yeah.
Because that movie stunk. And... I swore to myself I wouldn't see another Tom Cruise film. Saw Edge of Tomorrow. I loved it. So what I asked you guys to do is to bring me something else that can further relaunch my desire to see Tom Cruise movies, but also the nation's. Rhea, we can start with you.
Okay. I decided to write a sort of a, you know what, it's not a reboot, it's a sequel to something that we all, I think, pretty much enjoyed. So I decided to pitch to you Haywire 2.
Oh, great.
Starring, again, Gina Carano and Tom Cruise. Now, I see Tom as the new Scott character.
He is much littler than her.
Way tiny.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure that
he's going to be like a Polly Pocket. It's going to be totally fine.
Does he come with a playset?
He comes with a little comb in a little house, and then she carries him around. It's actually going to be like an apple. I don't know why. Just happened to be.
Oh, an apple playset?
Yeah, like, well, no.
It's the shape of an apple?
His house, his Polly Pocket house is an apple. And then it has a little, the stem is a handle.
Real apple, plastic apple.
Plastic red apple.
Yeah, okay.
You know, like a Red Delicious.
Yeah, he's in there.
And he's in there. He has a little bed.
Yep.
Little tiny shoes.
Now, how does he fit all of his statements?
Well, there's like little, it's like a caboodle in there.
Got it.
And he puts all of his little Tom Cruise, his teeth go in there and his little hairpiece, all that stuff.
Okay, great.
So.
Yeah, keep going. Do you have something in your eye?
No, I don't. I'm sorry. So I see Tom as the new Scott character, which was previously inhabited by our new neighbor. I've seen him around our neighborhood recently. Michael Angarano. Do you know who
inhabited by?
Whatever. Played by. Formally, whatever.
No, I want you to use that
if
forever.
It's not Baroque.
So, wait, are you saying it's still going to be the same body, but Tom Cruise goes into the body?
Into the body, yeah. They look a lot alike. So I see him as the clueless lawyer type who gets pulled into Gina's orbit while she chases Antonio Banderas. And I understand that they may ruin some of the love for the first Haywire, but goddammit if we didn't want to see her beat the pollen out of the Nasonex bee. That's my pitch it.
the end line... Super obscure. I get it.
What are you talking about?
I mean, I know who the Nasonex B is. I just don't understand why she wanted to beat the pollen out of him. Is that just a saying?
Yeah, I made it up.
Like a punching saying?
Yes.
We're using that. I want you to...
Yeah.
Rhea, you have to work that into every show from now.
Until forever?
Until forever.
So I'm going to have to say, if it's not Baroque, don't fix it. And I want to beat the pollen out of the Nasonex bee.
I'm fine with you leaving it's not Baroque. If it's not Baroque, don't fix it, because that's not like your original
turn
of phrase.
But I enjoy saying that.
I mean, you can put it or not. But you're fired from the show if we go through a single show where you're like, you know what's weird about this scene where he's almost going to beat the pollen out of the Nasonex bee? Just want you to go through that.
Okay. That
great.
I can do.
Okay. Ricky, what's your pitch?
Hi, Cameron. Thank you for seeing me once again today.
You better have a cute turn of phrase with a cartoon animal in it.
Insect.
I do not have any of those things, but I have what I think is going to make you what is scientifically known as a fuck ton of money.
Oh, great.
Now, Tom Cruise, as you said, he has had a bit of a rough patch last couple of movies.
Yeah.
So we want to give him that one thing that's going to get asses in seats. And what gets asses in seats this year? Two words I got for you. Kevin Hart.
You
Boom!
Know what? Ricky?
Boom!
Yes. I was just thinking that I can't believe he doesn't have his own action franchise yet because he's small but very taut.
Yes.
And who is better to make Tom Cruise look like a towering behemoth
than little Kevin Hart?
Yeah.
You know? I mean, what movie do you want to make and just put Tom Cruise and Kevin Hart in there and
oh my God.
A goddamn winner?
Ricky, I have a great idea.
Boom, hit it.
Why not? A reboot of 48 Hours.
A reboot of 48 Hours. Solid.
That's great. What about
Solid.
The movie Splash?
A reboot of Splash? As Kevin Hart in the John Candy role? Is that where we're going?
Yes.
Kevin Hart in the John Candy
role. No, let's make it progressive. Tom Cruise is
the mermaid,
and Kevin Hart is Tom Hanks.
Wow.
And they're in love with each other. Madison. Well, thanks. There we go.
I had an idea where Tom Cruise and Kevin Hart get something going on. If we did go the remake / mashup route. I wanted to do Interview with a Vampire
Ooh.
In Brooklyn.
That's great.
Oh
that is great.
I'm telling you, it's. I mean, you want money, right?
Okay, Rhea,
that's what's
I know.
Up.
You
hey,
brought in a great
that's
thing.
What's up.
He just beat
but...
the pollen out of the nasonex. I know
man.
What I've been bested.
Smacking that
so.
Pollen. Smacking it.
Ricky, that's it. You know, like you won at least two pitches in advance from now. I mean, we'll still
you.
Do them.
I'll be here.
You know, and Rhea might win some of them, but oh. even if she wins, you've won.
Thank you.
You know what I mean?
You
like
won.
It's that goes so it's 2 to 3 out from now. Great job, Ricky.
Thank you.
Honestly, so on point.
Thank you.
I'm proud of you.
The other great duo in that movie, soundtrack by Daft Punk. Goodbye.
Okay, great.
There we go.
Sounds perfect. We will be back with a review of Edge of Tomorrow after this. Inspired, Ricky. Inspired.
Have you made vacation plans yet? The second annual Atlantic Ocean Comedy and Music Festival is ready to set sail this summer, and we want to see you on board. Imagine amazing comedians, stellar music, and beautiful Caribbean views. It all takes place July 25th through 28th, en route to Nassau, the Bahamas. And frankly, we've impressed even ourselves with this lineup of bullseye favorites. You've got Moshe Kasher.
I was in an airport recently. You ever see somebody and you're just like, oh, so you're what's wrong with everything in the world.
Kyle Kinane.
Anybody else in here get so drunk last month you had to call a cab just to take you to Wendy's?
W. Kamau Bell.
So complicated, my feelings.
Morgan Murphy.
I don't know if you guys know what a facelift is. It's when they take your face skin and they... peel it away from your face, and in that little space there, that's where they find your self-esteem.
And besides them, Greg Barrett, Chris Fairbanks, Karen Kilgariff, Natasha Leggero, Guy Branum, Tony Kameen, and Carol Cole, plus an awesome music lineup hosted by John Roderick of the Long Winters and featuring our pal Gene Gray. Come on, what else are you going to be doing? Don't miss the funniest weekend of your life. Get your tickets right now. Go to boatparty.biz. Yeah, that's right. Boatparty.biz. The Atlantic Ocean Comedy and Music Festival. Comedy, music, shuffleboard.
And now is the time of the show to give you a brief review of a dick flick. This week, we chose Edge of Tomorrow, currently in theaters. As you should know by now, spoilers do follow. So if you haven't seen the film, know that we're going to talk about it in detail. And if you have seen the film, I'm so happy for you. It's a great movie. This is directed by Doug Liman. Now, he did Born Identity, Mr. and Mrs. Smith. Also, did you guys know Swingers?
Yeah.
Like, I just didn't... I'm an idiot, but I guess I just didn't realize... How is that from that? What the hell?
No idea.
How? What the hell? Okay, that's... I think I've proven my point. I mean, Born Identity changed action movies. I think partially for the better, partially for the worse. After that movie happened, so many films now feel like they have to be that pace and that constant, you know, everything new happening all the time. And I love the Born Identity... And I hate other movies that are trying to do that are not doing a good job. Like, sometimes a movie just needs to relax.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, Edge of Tomorrow did a great job with that. Looper did a great job with that. There's a lot of movies that have been able... I even thought Godzilla did a pretty great job with that, of being a little bit more metered in its pacing, as opposed to just, like, get on the ride! I also had a soft spot in my heart for Mr. and Mrs. Smith. I don't know. I liked it.
It's fun.
It is fun.
It's one of the few movies I fell asleep in.
Ooh.
Oh.
Don't eat ribs before a midnight showing of Mr. and Mrs. Smith, ladies
and
gentlemen.
You know who didn't fall asleep during that movie? Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt.
Okay. Humping.
They were. Now, Edge of Tomorrow stars Tom Cruise and Emily Blunt. Yeah, there's some other people in it. I don't even want to talk about it. I just want to talk about the two of them.
Yep.
It's fine. We can... Who cares? This is also based on a novel... And one reason I bring that up is because the title of the novel is actually amazing. But I completely understand why they couldn't use it for a movie. It's called All You Need Is Kill. And that's a great title for like a action novel and a pretty unusable movie title. But kudos to that.
All You Need Is Kill. Sounds like a Sin City.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. Or a U2 single.
Like a really intense UTS. And just to generally summarize the movie, so let's say an army PR man, played by Tom Cruise, is sent to the front lines in sort of a D-Day type invasion. Invasion? What's the word for it?
Well, it's like a...
Attack?
Attack, yep. Great job, Ricky.
Sorry.
Through a phlegmy throat. Through an attack of his own.
I'm dedicated, y'all. Dedicated.
It's a D-Day type attack on Normandy. Now, interestingly enough, of course, this movie is also released on the 60th anniversary of D-Day, which I think is in pretty poor taste, to be
absolutely
completely real. That's in pretty poor taste, because that's a real thing, and this is not a real thing. And I also don't really know that... I don't know. I don't know that it, like, paid tribute to those. I think there's a different way that this movie could have used, like, real events and paid tribute to them. This just feels like a separate movie where it's like, yeah, remember when that thing happened? But it doesn't necessarily feel... D-Day aligned to me. What do you guys think?
I mean, it honestly, like, it feels like, oh, hey, Predator is, like, you know, in remembrance of Vietnam because it's in the jungle. You know, like, it's so similar but not the same because it's not real and it's not.
That's a really good, and there's a way that you can do that where it, like, is more of an allegory, I guess, for the experience of that. Maybe that's why this was weird to me. Is like, there's no allegory, there's no, like, greater meaning. It's just like, oh, this is this thing and this thing.
I took it as like a parallel, an allegory, and I wasn't crazy about it, but I wasn't crazy about it because I was just like, this is too on the nose right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
there's a scene
where Bill Paxton says something to, like, the first time he says that line about fate, and he's making them all eat the cards. And he's looking, like, directly into the camera when he says it. I was, like, sitting very close in the theater I was at, and I was just like, I got it, bro. Move on with the movie, please. You don't need to hold up a fucking, you know, PowerPoint either and tell me the lessons I'm going to be learning right now. So it was just, like, a little too upfront to me.
Maybe also because the movie is so fun.
Yes.
Maybe that's my issue with it.
It has a sense of humor.
With a different tone, this same movie could have been like, oh, for instance, District 9 is dealing with racism and also the legacy of apartheid in a very serious way. That movie has, like, a couple laughs in it, but it is, like, soul-crushing. The experience of watching that movie is, like, there's so much sadness in that movie. This movie is fun and exciting and, like, mentally stimulating.
And
it's not soul-crushing.
It's an exercise in form, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
More so than trying to create any sort of a metaphor or allegory,
yes.
I think.
Right, and I think what you're alluding to there, and I'll say this, so the D-Day style invasion happens. This is going to be a big spoiler. Big spoiler. Tom Cruise dies.
What?
Then he wakes up. What happens? He lives the same day again. Then what happens? He dies. He wakes up. He lives the same day again. That's because these aliens can replay time to learn from their mistakes. And because Tom Cruise was killed by one of their main aliens, Bowser, he gets to be a part of the alien life cycle and restart the day, hopefully learning how to defeat the alien. So you see the same day many times and also in different portions. And I was talking to Rhea about this. One thing I love about the way they did time travel in this movie is that sometimes he makes it far enough in the day and then he dies. And then when he comes back, he cuts to after when he died before. And it makes you realize, like, oh, he got beyond that.
Yeah.
And it is how we play video games. Like, this movie, the way that they conceptualize time travel in this movie, it's as if there's been a save. Like, as is when, you know, even when we played Mario on the original Nintendo, if you got to a certain point and you jumped into a fire pit, you got to start from that point. And I just think that a lot of the concept of time travel is based in this thing that everybody in our generation and younger than this has grown up in. I don't even play video games, but they have changed the way that I think. No, and I like loved that about it.
When I walked out, it was the first thing my friend who saw it. He was like, that's the first like, that's like the video game movie there we just saw, right? And I was like, God damn, that was. I mean, there's that scene. I mean, there's literally a scene where he's like, we're gonna go left, we're gonna go right, right. And we're gonna stop three steps to the right. I mean, that's just when you play fucking GoldenEye, that's what you learned how to do. Yeah. All right, there's a dude over there, shoot that way, wait. I mean.
The only other
they do it well. They do it right.
It's amazing.
Exactly.
They do a great job, and it doesn't feel forced or weird.
Yeah.
The only other time I've ever seen anybody do something that seemed like where I was just like, "Oh, you're tapping into this." There's a beginning of one of the Resident Evil movies where like Mila Jovovich is like immediately killed, and then her body's taken out and dumped in a ditch, and then the camera pans over and you see like 100 or 1,000 Mila Jovovich bodies because she's just been killed that many times and like it happens at different places. And it's seeing that I was like, oh my God, because that's a video game, right? You know, Resident Evil is a video game and like, oh my God, that's how you showed us all of the lives. Like, I just think it's video games are something that's so in our culture. It's so in the water. We never see it interacting back. You know, because it's separate. We still keep it so separate.
Yeah.
There's actually another movie that did that. Spoiler alert for the movie Triangle. It's a B movie that came out recently that there was like a pile of this woman's bodies that was like how many times she'd been trying to get through this thing. And then you don't know which thing is real. It's pretty great.
Well, there you go. Pile of bodies. all right. So let's get into some best and worst. Rhea, I'm going to start with you.
Okay.
What is the worst part of this movie?
I am going to have to go, hands down, the worst part of this movie is the ending of this movie. And I just mean like the last, what, minute, 2 minutes of the movie.
It's a very segmented ending.
Yes.
It's very on its own ending.
I did a little bit of research about it that this movie was in development for a really long time. It was on the blacklist in like 2010.
It was bought for $1 million.
Yeah.
The original screenplay, which is actually not who got the credit on the movie. The guy who, the blacklist is a list of the best written screenplays that haven't been turned into movies.
Mm-hmm.
And he got on that list and then it was bought from that list for $1 million. And then somebody else rewrote it and got the credit. So like some dude out there is a millionaire.
Yeah.
What's up,
Beagle,
and they started shooting it with no ending. So that's why it feels so tacked on, because they just had to figure something out.
Hmm.
And I just feel like that entire movie felt so earned. There was like nothing in that movie where I was like, this doesn't make any sense. Why would this happen? Or this feels odd. These people, I don't like this. I don't like where this is going. Like the whole movie, I was just like on board with everything until that ending where I was just like, wait, what? And I don't mind an abrupt ending that makes you think, you know, or makes you stop and go, whoa. And, just ends the movie for you, but I just feel like it was so much wasted like amnesty that we were just like into it and then you just stopped it.
Can I say the only consolation was that that didn't happen 15 seconds into the credits? Because that ending is awful, but now imagine that being like a stunt ending. I'm so sick of seeing movies where there's like an Easter egg in the credit sequence.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think of the only way that ending could have been more frustrating is if we were like, oh, motherfucker. If we had to stay and wait for it.
Also,
awful ending. Awful.
So bad.
It's not just like destroying the tension. It's also just, wait, why?
Right.
There's no, it doesn't make sense. It's not explained. And it's not helpful. It doesn't even make you feel good.
I mean, it's fun, but it's smirky in the way the beginning of the movie was smirky. So why would I want to go back to that? Why would any of us want to go on this journey with a guy who started out as a jackass and then ended up like busting his ass however million times, earning this woman's trust, working with her, and then just going back to being like a smirking asshole? I don't know. I didn't really like it. I also wanted to say one thing that fellow comedian Andy Wood pointed out to me before the movie and then also on Facebook, that the last two Tom Cruise movies are blatant, they're very similar to Duncan Jones's films, that Oblivion was super similar to Moon. Mm-hmm. And then this movie is very similar to Source Code, which I was also thinking about when I was watching this movie. Because I liked Source Code. It just, I felt a lot when I was watching that movie, like, God, I don't want to keep seeing this. You're showing me the whole thing.
They
every
didn't
time.
Figure out the video game cheat.
And then in this, like you were talking about, the editing is just like brilliant. Like it kept me interested and entertained the entire time instead of feeling like a slog of like, God, I don't want to play the whole game every time.
Yeah.
You know? So anyway, thanks, Andy.
Ricky, what about you? Worst part?
Those last 3 minutes of that movie, I'll even say 3 minutes into when the credits start. And I think when the credits in a movie start, that's a very important moment in the movie, because it wasn't that great, everybody. Thank you for coming. You can either stay and watch this or enjoy the walkout. So that coda happens at the end where I was like, why am I seeing this? Why is this happening right now? Why didn't it fade to black after the thing in the water? Or just give me some other image, but I have no interest in seeing this. The story's over. So then we get that ending. And then that fucking rock song just kicks
in. I agree with
in,
you.
And I was like, I was pretty fucking upset. Like, what the hell just happened to that really intelligent sci-fi movie I just saw? That had a great, well, you know what? I wasn't crazy about the score, but I was thinking about the score as it was playing. I was thinking a lot like, man, this sounds a lot like The Dark Knight, which I like, but I wish I wasn't thinking about The Dark right now. I just want to be watching this movie. And that fucking rock song kicks in, and I was like, what the hell is going on? Why is it so loud and in my face when you've just been making me think and really fucking
That's interesting.
Had me engage like that? It made me so, that's... And then after that song is over, and then like the score kicks back in, and it's like, just play that,
even
man. Don't try
imagery.
And sell me a rock song right now.
Oh yeah,
I would say even the imagery of the credits.
Those credits,
like, they don't fit.
I
wanted to get out of there.
That's a staple.
During that too, and I didn't even think about it at the time. But
we talked about that as the credits were happening. That's like a template in credits now, where it's like some stenciling comes up that shows you an object from the movie you just saw, or like some weird kind of like frame from the movie, and then like credits pop up. Stop making those credits.
Yeah.
I don't want to see those credits
anymore.
No,
I agree.
It reminded me of that new McDonald's commercial that's going around where a woman is playing video games late at night and then like a dude brings her hamburgers. That's like very Sin City looking. But it looked like that.
Oh, I have seen it. Yeah,
it looked like that. And you're right. The end of that movie is a dick.
Yeah, it's just like,
it's like a dick
that, movie
that I don't want to talk to. It's like an asshole at a party. It's like,
why'd you just get all loud for?
So just before we get to our best parts, I do think, because we've been talking about this and there might be some people that listen that want to know what the ending is that don't, you know, see it. And so I'll just say, you know, the whole movie is replaying this same day. And for some reason, in the last segment, now when Tom Cruise dies, he always comes back to the same spot in the day. He always wakes up on a bag of army supplies and he's sideways. It happens every time. For some reason, when he kills like the boss level alien, he wakes up earlier in the day in the exact same opening scene. But it doesn't make sense as to why there's any particular marker of that day. It's not when he woke up.
It's
when we met him.
Yeah, I think it's the moment, because I did think about that. I think it's the aliens. When it starts again, we get that press conference. Something happened with the aliens. They're all dead. He kind of wakes up at the same time as that happens. So I think he's gone back in time, and that's his... He gets to start when they go away, because they don't exist anymore. So
right.
They can't put him in that point where it's like, here's where we can take advantage of you.
It's as though he wiped out the entire level of the game.
Yeah.
Like he warped back, because what I was reading too is that it the whole thing is based around that battle, because they're trying to get the humans to fight them in a war that the humans
so
think they can win.
So you think that they
so
all die when?
So when he sets, when that bomb goes off and the aliens dies, it can't recharge itself and go back in time.
Right.
It can't set that recharge.
So he took it all.
So when is the original time set, though? God, I love this conversation on the podcast right now.
Well, this
what does it line up with, though? What's the marker
just,
in the movie?
Well, there's only one timeline in
Sleeping.
The movie.
No, but... But, okay, hang on.
All right, sorry.
Yeah.
What in the alien's life does it line up with? I don't get it.
It
I don't get the end of this movie!
It lines up with their battle plan for that for that battle that they were going that he
so
keeps
that's because when they their thought
marker,
of it
yeah no their yes. marker is they them getting us to come they want us to come attack
right
yes. so there every time it starts they have to they put us there no you have to come start in this battle so once they're no longer at that battle themselves then that goes away. It's
so
just
we're
prior
supposed
to
know that the aliens thought of their battle plan when Tom Cruise was in the helicopter. Is this what you're telling me? Listen, if it takes this much, I am a smart motherfucking person. If it takes you this much and nobody at home even knows what the fuck we're talking about, and I'm so sorry you've had to listen to this. But anyway, who gives a
shit? I had to listen to other podcasts and read a lot of articles today to figure that out. So I didn't think about it. It didn't come to me right away. I like
that's
this movie
also
a lot.
It's
really
opaque.
Can
what
I just,
are you talking about?
Can I tell you this? It is very similar to when Marty McFly goes to 1955 and intercepts the Gray's sports almanac and burns it, and then the business card in his hand changes from Biff's casino to Biff's auto detailing. So that whole,
I get what you're saying.
That
I just don't get why the chopper scene is the
falls
marker.
Off.
Well, I'll just go do some reading on my own. In conclusion, I don't know what the fuck happens.
Are we
going to
talk about best parts?
Yes, we'll get the best parts. Rhea, what's the best part?
I thank you for letting me go first, because I feel like I'm just going to open the floor for discussion on this one. Best part of the entire movie. I hands down, cannot believe that we have finally gotten to a point in our collective lives that a character played by Emily Blunt was on screen. I have never seen, and we talked about this, Cameron, the day that you saw it. I have literally never seen a female character on screen like this. That she was, you find out that she also had been given this power and wasn't able to capitalize on it, to change the course of action or the planet. And she is carrying that weight with her as a soldier. Not as, like, a woman. She wasn't hurt. She wasn't sexually assaulted. She doesn't have kids. Like, none of that shit comes into it. There's an allusion to her having a partner who she may or may not have been romantically involved with, or she may have just cared about him because he was a human being. But I just think it's... I have never seen anything like that.
I agree that it is astounding and wonderful to finally see a woman who is believable for the job that she has. You know, a female soldier is a soldier. Even, I was thinking about even Alien. Now, Alien is our touchstone for badass women, or a touchstone for badass women. Even in Alien, now this is a little bit of an Alien spoiler. Sigourney Weaver does not want to let the infected face hugger guy into the ship, Kane. She doesn't want to let him into the ship, but she doesn't have the power to stop that from happening. And she makes every right decision. You know, she makes decisions based on, like, logic and also protection and also safety, but, like, she can't protect herself. So it's even one step further than that, where it's somebody who's making decisions from this, like, logic and safety and what's the greatest good, but then also who can back it up with, like, physical power. And that's amazing to see. I mean, the only other person I can think of is, like, Terminator 2, Sarah Connor. And I think that, she, you know, again, she makes, like, tough decisions. She protects her kid by, like, sending her kid away. But,
she's also
again, she's
sexually
a mom.
Assaulted in Terminator 2.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. So there's a lot of... Right. It's just nice to see a movie where... Where Uma Thurman doesn't want to kill Bill because of all this horrible shit that men did to her. It's just like, this is a soldier. She's a woman. She's tough as shit. I loved it.
She takes her job seriously.
Ricky, what about you? What's the best part?
If I may be so blunt. Emily Blunt whoops that ass in that movie. She's got. I was like, man, what kind of fucking sword is that? That she's got. That's a helicopter blade. She carries a helicopter blade, bro. So that's banging. I think this is my favorite movie of the summer. I kept thinking about. I was thinking about it a lot yesterday, and I was thinking about it a lot today. And yeah, I listened to a bunch of podcasts and read about it.
And yeah, it's just, I was like, man, that movie was fucking fun. They just did so many things right. We just saw a movie about time travel. In X-Men Days of Future Past, the beginning, it's like all this fucking, here are the rules of this movie. In this, you know, and it's one scene where they just give you all this exposition. It's just like, oh, just fucking get through it. And they don't do that in this movie. We learn as he's learning, going along. And then they fuck with us with the editing. Like, oh, wait, I get it. Now he's at this point. I thought that was really, really smart, really well done. I like that they don't sell you in the trailer, which is I was okay with. They don't sell in the trailer that you're not going to like Tom Cruise at the beginning of this movie. And I was very thrown off by that. And I was like, oh, I like this already. This guy's, Tom Cruise is an asshole.
Great.
You know, and they do it with just, to me, I caught it with him just repeating the same line about whatever that mech suit was. I was like, somebody, is this all you got to fucking say about this mech suit? Sounds like all these people are dying. And I was like, oh, it's because he's an asshole. And then that scene that he has with Brendan Gleeson where you're like, his plan is literally, I mean, it's Tom Cruise. You're still watching the movie thinking Tom Cruise is a movie star. And Tom Cruise is like, you know what? I'm just going to run. That's my point. Like, that's a great thing to see Tom Cruise movie star be like, fuck it. Like, it's just a good, we're going to knock this guy's character all the way down. I really enjoyed that. That opening, they figured out, I nominate this summer, the scene that they figured out now is, you know, fucking jumping out of something in a one-track shot all the way down. That scene in Godzilla where they jump out and the scene, that first scene where he drops on that cable, I mean, I was like, I could watch him fall for fucking 15 more minutes because I kept expecting it to stop and then, like, cut to him landing and it's just like, holy shit, now he's spinning and that dude over there, he's on fucking yeah. fire. I mean, that's...
Titanic in the air.
Yes. So great.
Well, I...
So great.
Ricky, I think your point is really well made about Tom Cruise being an asshole, and I actually think that's why this movie, you know, has the potential to save him. It saved him in my mind because I don't want to see Tom Cruise be Tom Cruise in a movie. When he is Tom Cruise, he is so unlikable.
Yeah.
I was talking to somebody about this, and they said, because we're Americans, like, we love underdogs. That's our whole thing. We still think of ourselves as the underdogs, even though we, like, are just, you know, polluting and killing the world and, you know, but we're still just like, yeah, remember when they took our tea? Like, we love an underdog story. And to see somebody who is the level of Tom Cruise, who we've seen be successful for the length of time that Tom Cruise has been successful, and who we've, you know, seen, like, women leave him and wondered about whether or not he's a good guy. And then, like, to see that movie Oblivion, I just kept coming back to how he's so fucking satisfied with himself, such, like, a shit-eating grin the entire time.
Yeah.
I couldn't stand it. It made me sick to watch him. To watch Tom Cruise, like, act and to watch Tom Cruise have to grow, that gave me so much hope because it makes me feel like, oh, maybe as even a person, there's still room for you to grow. So I just... That he needs to, this is where he needs to be. Yeah. This movie, he fucking needs, I hope he's writing thank you notes. Emily Blunt, just like, thank you for being the, you know, just never asking any questions. And
when he plays against type, like, the movies I was thinking of was like Interview with a Vampire and like Magnolia, where it's like, you're not going to see Tom Cruise in this movie. I think he fucking knocks it out.
He has to do those. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
like, he has to do those all the time now.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying those have to be all his movies, but he has to do a bunch of them to reset the day. Like, I just can't watch Tom Cruise movies without
Because we all know what's going on.
Yeah.
It's real. You can't, like, you can't suspend your disbelief or your belief or whatever. And I loved that we actually got to see, like, oh, this is just maybe how you are.
Right. So here's the final thing that I want to say for my best part, which is that somebody I thought this movie did a really, really great job. And of course, my real best part in my heart is Emily Blunt. You're amazing. How are you? But what I liked about this movie was that it took war, violence, and death, and it made it funny and interesting and awful, but it also made it weighted. It did all of those things. And the number of movies that have been able to accomplish that, it's not very many. And it's because they did a great job of playing with the time travel where people died in a lot of different ways and where it was Tom Cruise every time. Like, who doesn't want to see Tom Cruise get run over by a truck? Of course you want to see that. So the idea that they were able to figure that out, but then also still at the end make death real You know, that is a balance that I feel like has been missing from action movies for so long. Like, we need action movies to purge our fears and to celebrate our strengths. Like, we need them. As a society, we made them because we used to make plays like this. You know, this is where this comes from. It's something we need to talk about. We need to, like, sing war ballads. We need to do this. But I think when an action movie is done poorly, it's a real slap in the face to the people who actually live these lives. You know, I'm thinking about, like, that Superman film where people are dying left and right and there's no real weight to their deaths. And I just think, like, I think a soldier could see this movie and not feel cheapened. This is just a guess. I think it is possible. So what do you guys think about that just before we end the show?
I think it's possible. I think it's possible that you could have a sort of vicarious enjoyment through this world that's created. I do think, however, that the ending is what might make that slightly less possible.
Sure, I'm just talking about the rest. What I'm saying is, like, I can't imagine having to actually fight and then come home and people go see movies where it's, like, hilarious that tons of people, like, flippant, you know? I just don't think we need to be that way. We don't need to be flippant. It doesn't need to be funny. It can be, like, it can be great.
For sure. As much as I enjoy, you know, crazy, just fucking over-the-top action, it is so refreshing when you do see a movie that has all the, you know, great action beats, but there's also some emotional weight behind this. I think the really big, I'm sorry not to drag it on, but a really great scene is when they're both in that, like, barn together, and then you start to realize, like, oh shit, that's right. This emotional beat is coming into play as well, because he's been doing this so long. You're fucking watching your friend die over and over again, and you can't. How many times are you going to do that? You're going to eventually be like, what if I just start lying to them?
Yes.
I mean, that was, like, one of my favorite scenes in the movie, because I was like, why is this happening? Holy shit. That's great. I mean, that was my favorite movie of the year so far.
Yep.
My favorite movie of last year. So to conclude our review in brief, Rhea, on a scale of 1 to 5 groundhog yays.
Groundhog yippee-ki-yay-yays?
Yes,
I give it 5.
Great. Ricky, on a scale of 1 to 5, thank you notes sent to Emily Blunt by Tom Cruise. How many thank yous do you give this movie?
I want to give it 5. You're so goddamn nice, Rhea. I wish I was like, I have to give it.
Sorry.
I'll give it 4.9 for that fucking song at the end that just made me so upset.
That Nickelback song?
Oh, well, yeah. I was like, what is this? It was like Nickelback or Stained, whoever the fuck needed to get back for this soundtrack to pay a rent bill or some shit.
Never
Boo
made
on
it
you.
As a wise man. Well, I'm giving it tomorrow 5 giant awesome propeller swords. I'm just going to choose to love it as it is and look the other way at its faults like a child. So we'll leave you this. Rhea, what are you thinking about this week?
Number one, I just want to say thanks to everybody that tweeted at me and let me know that the dinosaur cartoon in question that I was trying to recall in the last episode was, in fact, Dino Saucers.
Yes.
So thank you, everybody.
Dino Saucers.
Let me know that is exactly what I was trying to think of. I also wanted to let everybody know that friend of the show, Bobcat Goldthwait's newest film is out on iTunes and other various video on demand sources. It's called Willow Creek, and I highly recommend watching it. I really enjoyed it.
Scared the crap out of me.
Super scary, very funny. I just really dug it. And I also recently watched a movie that is on Netflix, but I think it's also on HBO Go. It's a documentary called The Loving Story, which is about the Lovings, which in, I believe, 1963, somewhere around there, they were arrested for interracial marriage in Virginia, which was illegal at the time. It was called miscegenation, and there were laws on the books in mostly southern states that people of different races could not get married, and it was basically a white supremacy law, and they took it to the Supreme Court, and they won, and it's a beautiful story. In and of itself, it's just an amazing story. There's a lot of footage of them and their children, some of their family. It talks a lot about their lives. And as a gay person, I found a lot of hope in that story and in that fight and in their love and in them just finding each other and realizing that they had to do something for other people to change the country and to change the way things are going. So I really enjoyed it, and I highly recommend it.
And Ricky, what about you?
I'm going to the things that I'm enjoying right now. I'm a huge fan of The X-Files and a friend of the show as well, a friend of ours. Kumail Nanjiani has a great podcast out called Kumail Nanjiani's The X-Files Files, where he breaks down The X-Files, and I've listened to it, and it's great. So I recommend that if you didn't have a girlfriend in high school, like your boy, and spent your Friday nights watching The X-Files. Just to tag on to Edge of Tomorrow again, this movie's not making a lot of fucking money. Go see this movie, because these are the good action sci-fi movies. Another good one that falls in the same vein of this one, it was on Netflix streaming. I checked today. It no longer is, but you should still see it. And I don't know if I've recommended on this before, but I'm going to say it again. See Time Crimes, a Spanish movie by the director Nacho Vigalondo. En español es Los Cronocrímenes. So see Time Crimes. It's a really great time travel movie that will you'll like it. I don't want to say too much about it. That's it. Yay.
Oh, hooray. I don't even know what I'm thinking about. I have like a couple. I've been reading a little bit lately, and if I haven't recommended BJ Novak's new book on the show, you should check that out. That's a great book. And I also recently read Before Watchmen, the Dr. Manhattan and Night Owl edition. I would recommend that. I would also recommend sending me some recommendations on podcasts you guys listen to. I feel like the ones that I've been listening to for a long time, I just go through them pretty quickly. I listen to podcasts when I travel and sometimes when I go to sleep. So if there's any out there that you guys really love that you think, oh, this is a great soothing one, I'm just curious to hear what it is. I'm always looking for new stuff to get into. So send me some podcast recommendations at Cameron Esposito. Let me know. And for next week, we are going to watch Machete Kills, which is available right now on Netflix. Watch Instant. Until then, I'm Cameron Esposito.
I am Rhea Butcher.
I am Ricky Carmona.
And you've been listening to Wham Bam Pow. Wham Bam Pow is recorded at Maximum Fun headquarters by Lindsay Pavlos. Thank you, Lindsay. And Maximum Fun, thank you for listening.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.